Hello, Greg here from Balloon Market, and welcome to the very first Balloon Market podcast. Balloon Market, if you're not aware, is a balloon and party wholesaler here in the UK. We host a YouTube channel called Balloon Market TV, BMTV for short. We've been doing that for a couple of years now. And with this podcast, we hope to help people grow their businesses, so in the balloon and party trade. So that could be a retailer, you could be a party planner, you could be a balloon decorator, but we hope to share a few more tips, advice, knowledge from people in the industry, outside of the industry, about growing your business. So this week, to start with, we are joined by somebody that has been in the industry for more than 30 years that started out as a florist and fell in love with balloons, and his love affair with balloons has continued to this very day. He works for a company called Amscan, one of the largest balloon and party manufacturers in the world, and he has a lot of knowledge, a lot of advice, a lot of wisdom about being in the industry. So without further ado, I present to you Mr. Chris Horn. Chris, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome, Greg.
To start with, I mean, I've introduced you as Chris Horn from Amscan because I know your job title is quite long. What is your job title and what do you do?
Okay, job title is International Creative Projects Manager.
Okay.
And that kind of covers all sorts of stuff. Probably the main focus is education at the moment, because I hold it very personal to me that education is key to success in the industry. But in addition to all of that, I manage the balloon side of the showroom. I work on the trade fairs and exhibitions that we do. Anything creative to do with balloons that comes up, photo stuff, photo shoots for the catalogue. It's a very wide-ranging and loose term and title. But it's great because it means that I don't necessarily know exactly what's going on from week to week or month to month, and it always keeps it new and fresh and exciting.
So you say exhibitions. We obviously saw you at the Spring Fair back in February, and we loved your jacket and your shoes.
I need to start thinking about next year's already. I think.
So do you get something new each year?
Yeah,
do you?
Yeah, it's my thing.
Okay, all right. So you've got to spend money on a new jacket and new shoes, and do you get wackier every year?
It's up and down.
I did see at the Spring Fair a few years ago, there were guys that were selling suits that were... There was one that was covered in balloons.
No, I'm not going there.
All right. So Chris, how did you get... I think it's always interesting to find out how people got into the industry and the journey they took and the careers they were leading and how they ended up where they are. What's your story? How did you get to be where you are?
I kind of fell into it, really. I've always been interested in art and creative projects and things like that, you know, from a very young age. But I also had quite an affinity with the sciences as well. And back in the last millennium when I was at school, and the school that I was at, it was very much the thing that I would be pushed towards the sciences. Art thing, do anything artistic. No. You should be a scientist. And so that's the way I went and ended up with a teaching degree in the sciences. Yeah, so I was a science teacher to begin with. But I think creative people, it never really, it's in there somewhere, isn't it? And at some point, you know, it just had to come out. And after a whole year of teaching, no, this is not for me. And I literally came home with the last month's salary and started a floristry business out of my parents' garage.
Wow.
Which grew. So I had, you know, one shop. We moved from the garage to a shop and then ended up with three shops and staff and all the rest of it, which was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And then the balloons came along because that was when they were literally first coming over from the States. They'd started off in the US. People had been to family members' weddings over there or something and coming back and said, "Oh, you never guessed what I saw over there. They had balloons at the receptions." And my initial thought was, ooh, you know, how tacky.
Yeah.
But fortunately, I was open-minded enough to say, well, I think I ought to look into this. And it was the best thing I did, I think, because I then started offering balloons as well as the flowers to our bridal customers and corporate stuff. And it just took over from there. And ended up going full circle because the balloons then took over. The flowers were edged out. Balloons don't die like flowers do, so that made quite a difference. You can store them for longer. The shops, slowly I sort of got rid of those and moved back to working from home, because at some point it dawned on me that I was in the back office doing all the paperwork and the people that I were paying were in the front doing all the fun stuff. This isn't right here. So I worked on my techniques, bought the right equipment and everything else, and was able to pull back from the retail frontage and work more from home with fewer people, and develop it from there. It's all, I've had a go at everything within the industry, I think. So when apart from your side of it, I've not done the trade bit yet.
Yet. Who knows?
Who knows? Now, too old.
You mentioned there that you had a successful floristry business, but then you went back to work from home. And what I've seen on various Facebook groups and things, some people perceive working as at home as being, I should charge less. I'm not offering as good value for some reason. Did you find working at home detrimental in any way to what you were offering?
In the earlier days it was, because we are talking over 30 years ago, and the internet wasn't there, and emails weren't there, mobile phones weren't there. It sounds ridiculous, but it's true.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? You just take all these things for granted.
Everything was done with pen and paper, and if you were very lucky, a fax machine. But so that actually did make a difference, because the customers back then were, they needed to go into a shop to buy something, to see something. And they didn't feel comfortable walking into somebody's house to talk about a wedding or whatever. So that was a little sticky. I mean, we got around that quite simply by not having anybody come to the house. We went everywhere. So if I, you know, a bride wanted to talk about their weddings, I would meet them at the venue and we'd discuss it there. Okay. Once I'd been all the way round and come back to working from home again, then things were different and the internet had appeared and mobile phone, and then it makes no difference at all where you're based from. There's no stigma attached to it. There's no, you can do anything from your back bedroom that you could do from a high street store. It really makes no difference at all. And as far as pricing is concerned, absolutely not. You price the same, you price to the value of the work that you're doing, regardless of what you're selling it out of, you know, whether it be a garage or a unit or a cupboard under the stairs. The price is for the work that you're doing and not where it's coming from.
I think that's something that people need to remember. It's the value that they are offering. And if you look at your overheads, you still have overheads working from home. You've still got to pay for those
They're
overheads.
Different, but they're there.
But this shouldn't really affect, in my opinion and your opinion, clearly, the price you're selling at.
Absolutely not.
Any cheaper.
No.
Okay, all right. I totally agree with you. Now, talking of pricing, as an industry, are we doing that right? Are we doing that wrong?
That's one of those questions, isn't it? That it's a perennial question. Some people are doing it right.
Yeah.
Definitely. And some people are getting it extremely wrong. And it's a very hard one to get people to understand. And I had the same problem when I first started, having worked with flowers, which are quite expensive and very perishable, and you've got to take all of that into account. They're very labour intensive when you're building, you know, bridal bouquets or funeral tributes or whatever it is. The labour cost is enormous. So I'd got my head around that one. And when I then started adding in the balloons, it was quite a shock, because the material cost is very, very small in terms of the volume that it fills and the impact that it has. So, you know, for instance, if you've got, you know, £10 worth of balloons and helium and ribbon and stuff, you can make something quite massive out of that. A similar amount of money spent on flowers and foam and vases and stuff will produce something really, really small.
Yeah.
So I had this issue of charging enough, and I think a lot of people have the same issue. You get it into your head that you need to add up the price of the product, add a little bit for the labour, and if you're good at it, the labour is small because you do it quickly. Add on a percentage to cover your overheads and everything else, and you end up with this figure that, quite frankly, is ludicrously small for the impact that this creation has. And people struggle with that one. So my solution to that was literally just to step back from it and try and imagine myself in the customer's shoes and imagine what impact that creation would have on my party. And what value it was to that. And almost forget about the obviously having the back of your head, but almost forget about the actual cost of the materials involved. And look at it from a point of view as to what is the value of this thing in terms of the impact it has on my event. And that helped me get over that hurdle. But it is a hurdle when you're first starting out, and you know you've got three latex balloons that cost you 10 pence each, and you know 50p's worth of helium and a couple of pence of ribbon, and it took me 10 minutes. You could make a profit out of it, albeit small, if you sold it for £2, but it's actually worth more like 8 or 9 to the customer. And that's a bit of a dichotomy, and people do struggle with that one. We do what we can to try and help through education, and you're doing the same thing. You know, all of the suppliers and all of the manufacturers all will attempt to help people price things correctly. You just need to listen.
Because you were talking earlier on about, you know, how people might do it. They compare themselves to the local supermarket and what they might be doing. But that's just, it's different, isn't it?
It is different. It is different. And it leads to a downward spiral in price and quality. You know, if you're worried that your local supermarket is selling balloons, the one thing you should not do is price what you do less than them. Because they will always beat you. They've got the buying power and everything else that they will always be able to underprice you. What you need to do in that respect is to kind of realise that whatever they might do, they will always only have a very limited slice of the market. They will never be able to offer, you know, 6-foot columns. I mean, who on earth is going to be able to get one of those home in the back of a small car with the kids? It's just not going to happen. So, you know, imagine the market, if you like, as this table, the segment that the supermarkets and mass market outlets are going to be able to supply is really tiny. Everything that they produce has got to be taken out of the store, put in the car, taken home, then that limits severely what they can do. So they've got this bit. You can ignore that bit. There's all this that you can concentrate on and make sure that you do it to the best of your ability. And I remember when the same thing happened. I was a florist. The supermarket started selling flowers. I thought it was the end of the world. It took me a little while, a couple of weeks or so. And then I thought, well, no, actually, they're never going to do bridal flowers. They're never going to do funerals. They're never going to do corporate events. And that actually, looking back on it, was the spur that I needed to be successful. I definitely didn't see it as something that, you know, was going to finish me off. It actually encouraged me to do what I do better than I was doing it before.
I very much doubt people are looking at your Facebook page to find out how much things are, and then looking at a supermarket to find out how much things are. I think people are in a different state of mind when they're shopping. I don't think it's direct competition. I don't think they're comparing the two at the same time. So therefore, I don't think you need to charge to compete with them on that price at all. Anyway.
Absolutely right. So, for me, I would rather sell 10 things at, you know, a high profit margin than 20 things at a low profit margin. I would, you know, I concentrate on adding value to whatever I'm doing. So yes, if a customer wants a single foil balloon on the ribbon and they come to me, they can have it, that's fine. But I'm not going to compete in price to get that business. What I am going to look for is looking for business that gives me more profit and more recognition, because everything that goes out of your business is also an advertisement for your business. So if you can sell things with extra on there to add value to it, then those will get noticed and people go, oh, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And it builds. Please don't stress over worrying that, you know, this shop down the high street is selling it for 20p cheaper than me.
Yeah.
Make yours 50p more valuable than theirs.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the way to
do it. And like you say, you're not going to go into a supermarket and buy a nice organic arch, are you?
No.
Or anything like that.
Well, you could try.
We could try.
It's not going to happen.
I'd like an organic arch, please.
Yeah. Well, you could have a balloon.
So you're an 18-inch foil. Yeah, yeah. So that's pricing. That's something that I think is a challenge. I think it's a challenge for all businesses, not just our industry. And I think sometimes people do undersell themselves, and we've talked about that before. But what other challenges do you see in the industry?
There's an awful lot of people that come into it thinking it's an easy thing to do, and it's not. It's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go again, and the ones that stick around are the ones that have got it right. And the big challenge for the industry is to educate everyone within it to get better at what they're doing, more professional, and price it properly. We are seeing a tendency in certain areas for the pricing and the quality to go down for the reasons we've just discussed, and I think that is a massive challenge for the industry as a whole, is to overcome that. It's always been the same. You know, all those years ago when I first started, there were always people that would work on price, and there were other people that would work on quality.
Yeah.
It's interesting that the people that worked on quality are still here.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's a challenge. The challenge of the public's perception. Everything has to be now.
Yeah.
There's very little time now to think and plan. It all needs to be instantly available.
Well, that's what you were saying. You know, from a wholesale point of view, 20 years ago, even 15 years ago, you'd place an order using that thing called the telephone, maybe.
Or the fax,
or
if you had one.
Fax machine.
I think I've still got one in my garage somewhere.
And the order had come through, but, you know, 4 or 5 day delivery was pretty normal.
Mm.
We try and have our cutoff for ordering as late as possible. But because people know it's as late as possible, guess when they order? As late as possible.
As late as possible. And that will always happen, yeah.
And it's, you know, but we understand that. So we've got to try and allow for that. So we're all piling the warehouse and picking and packing. And it's crazy.
But the same thing at the other end, you see. Once the product that you've shipped gets to the retailer or your customer, their customer is also wanting it. So the timescale of everything
Absolutely.
Is shrinking. And it does make me wonder where it's going.
But that's not going away. That's not changing.
No, it's not going to go away. Yeah, just need to rise to the occasion and find solutions.
Yeah.
But that is a challenge for every industry, but ours as well.
Now, I'd like to talk, Chris, about something that might be a touchy subject. But there are people in the industry that have said that manufacturers such as Amscan and Qualitex, selling direct is hurting the industry. What are your thoughts on that?
I suppose it begs the question, firstly, direct to who? We don't sell direct to the public.
Okay.
If Mrs. Smith is having a birthday party, she can't buy the stuff from us.
Yeah.
She would need to go into a retailer somewhere to get it. We sell to wholesale customers, obviously, like yourself, and occasionally, on some, you know, to some people, we will sell direct to businesses.
Yeah.
But when we do, that business needs to meet minimum order quantities. We can only sell in inner packs.
Yeah.
So a box of 12 weights of the same colour, 5 foil balloons of the same design, or if they're flat, 10. If they're buying party wear, it's often 12 of the same item. We can't sell individual. So it has to be a business of a certain size that can cope with that kind of order. Anything else will obviously come to wholesale customers such as yourself.
Would you say it is hurting the industry? It isn't hurting the industry?
I don't think it's hurting the industry at all. The number of that type of customer you have is very, very small.
Yeah.
And if you want to think of it this way, if we didn't sell to people like that, then people like you wouldn't be here because we sold to you in the first place and that got you going.
Our very first order.
And, you know, I would beg to suggest that has been a benefit to the industry, not a detriment.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, that is That's really interesting. I think there is a lot of fear out there that people feel that there is almost business being taken away from them. So that's, thank you for answering that potentially sticky, difficult question. So Chris, you've been in the industry a good few years.
Yeah, I lost count.
If somebody is just starting out in the industry, what tips or advice have you got for them?
Well, the internet is a huge help now, because there is so much there that can help somebody starting in their business. So really the best advice that I can give to anybody that's getting going is to have an open mind, to research, to look online, to talk to people, and to listen to what those people are saying. We try to help and encourage wherever possible. It's part of my remit to do so. You will do the same for customers. If you have a new customer coming in, I'm sure you're absolutely focused on helping them be the best, because it's in your interest, and it's obviously therefore in ours that we do so. And other manufacturers just the same. So, you know, don't be afraid of it, but don't be afraid to ask questions. That's the thing. And listen and evaluate and test.
But as you say, to start with, just type in how to set up a business.
You'll get all sorts of things. And be prepared to invest. That's another thing. It's actually a big frustration of mine that people sometimes are unwilling to invest in the right bit of kit or the right training or something like that. And those things are key to the success of business.
Yeah, training is a big thing. We went up to, the Qualitex World Tour the other day in Cheshunt, and a couple of months ago, and that was a training day there. And the value that people that attend, people that pay the money to go to these training days, nobody comes away saying, yeah, I don't think I learned anything there. I don't think I got my money's worth. Everybody was very, very excited. And I think it's quite hard, though, when you're starting out and you've got X amount of pounds and, you know, you've been told, OK, a £300 training course would be a really good thing for you to do. It's a cost, isn't it? But
it is,
you've got to get past that.
But it is
an investment.
It's a business cost. And, you know, therefore, it actually doesn't cost the business £300. My son's training to be an accountant. I'm hearing about all things like this. I don't really understand it, but no, it can be written off as part of the cost of the business. So, you know, you don't think of it as costing what you think it does. It's less, but the value of training, proper training, whether that be at the big events that you mentioned or on a more focused and individual level that we tend to do, is immeasurable.
Yeah.
Absolutely immeasurable.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, when you do individual training, if you've got one-to-one training with somebody, that's phenomenal. Because you can ask all the questions and really get to the bottom of it. So you came here a few years ago for us, didn't you?
I did
a demonstration. That seems like a lifetime ago.
It was a while.
And you had your groupies that follow you around the country.
Yeah. I won't tell you what my colleagues call them. You could probably work it out.
Do you still do the training?
Yes.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah. I'm out a lot, several times a week, but definitely several times a month, visiting customers and helping with, training to help them do better. But we don't do the massive, collective events. We tend to do it more on a more focused individual basis, on concentrating on what that particular customer needs.
And do you find the people that work with you and you, or that you work with doing this training, do you find that they're more successful than the ones that just, no, I'll just carry on doing it?
Oh, yeah. Way. Yeah, without question. Yeah, there's no doubt that, proper training really, really makes a difference to the quality of your work and the success of your business.
Yeah. So you think invest, find out as much as you can, invest in training.
Yeah, invest in training and invest in the right equipment to do the job. Too many people will have basic equipment that they've had for years. But spend a few hundred pounds on an upgrade, some digital stuff or whatever it happens to be, that will make you more efficient and faster.
Yeah.
And you can, increase your turnover enormously.
Yeah.
as a result. I resisted buying a digital dual sizer years ago when they first were invented. You know, the square one with the little switches on the top and the flick them on and off, one of them. Resisted that for ages because I felt that I couldn't afford it. I actually paid for it in the space of a weekend.
Yeah.
Because it let me do two extra jobs that I wouldn't have been able to do. It's that clear.
Yeah.
And it's that obvious afterwards.
Afterwards. So hindsight really is fantastic.
Mm, yeah. Amazing.
What else can I drill down about? Now we've done that. We've talked about quite a bit already.
Yeah, so that's, rambling that's on.
So let's find out a bit more about you. So I've got the, it says fun questions.
Okay.
So I know you've seen some of these, so they won't be a surprise. Ultimate dinner party. What would be your ultimate dinner party? Who would be there?
There'd be articulate is not the word I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say artistic type people. And there's two sculptors that I absolutely think are marvellous. One of them's Anish Kapoor. I'd love to talk to him about some of the stuff that he's come up with. And the other one's Chihuly,
okay.
Which is the guy that makes these very organic, twisty things out of blown glass. Stunning. Oh, look him up, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Those two, I'd love to spend some time with.
Yeah, okay. Very artistic, very artistic. So tell me something interesting about you that people don't know.
I once had an audience that I was not aware of about 30 Japanese school children break into applause behind me in a coffee shop in Hiroshima. Because I have always been fascinated with origami since I was quite young. There's a big, long, complicated story behind it, but I developed an interest in origami and I'm still really enjoy doing that. And I was lucky enough to go off to do some training and demonstrations in Japan on a big tour around. And on one of the very few days off in the middle of all of this, we went to Hiroshima. And I was so struck by the peace park there, where one of the traditions is for people to make garlands of paper cranes out of multicolored paper and string them all together, 1,000 at a time, and hang them all over the trees. It was incredibly moving. And I went and sat in the coffee shop, and I don't know, it's just my fingers are never still, and I ended up folding a row of paper cranes out of the napkins on the table. And then this applause broke out, and I turned around, and there was all these Japanese school children behind me who couldn't believe this Westerner could do this.
Fantastic.
And that was a funny moment, but a moving moment.
Origami amazes me. When I used to work on cruise ships, when I used to work on there, there was a customer that came up, and it was American dollars, and he had a US dollar in his pocket. Take it out. There's a giraffe.
Yeah.
As a lion. I've still got one at home. Absolutely.
It's
amazing.
Funny the parallels between the balloon industry as well.
Yeah.
You know, because when you look at the materials that we work with, they couldn't be much more basic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet what some people can turn those into is remarkable.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's where the interest came from.
Yeah. No, I think if you've got that creative mind. Do you walk around just in a creative cloud sort of thinking?
People, one of the most frequently asked questions I get is, where do you get your ideas from?
Yeah.
And I have never got an answer for that because I don't know. But I do know that I walk around with my eyes open all the time. I don't consciously look for inspiration, but I think I'm conditioned over the years to just absorb it. And I suppose that's another bit of advice is, you know, open your mind and open your eyes. Look up, not down. Because you never know where an idea will come from.
Interesting. Right. Favorite holiday destination?
That's I knew you were going to ask me that one, and I've been thinking of an answer, and I can't give you one because I actually haven't been anywhere on holiday for a very long time. That could be because I do so much travelling internationally with my job that actually my favourite holiday is staying at home.
Yeah, that's all right. I like to have a favourite holiday, staying at home.
Yeah, stay at home with the family.
Yeah, no, that's cool. What's your favourite destination in the world generally? So not necessarily a holiday destination.
I thought that one? Might be. I don't think I do, because each time I go somewhere, unless I've been there before, each time I go somewhere for the first time, it's like that's my favourite.
Yeah.
Until I go to another one, with a few exceptions.
I asked my daughter the other day. We were out for a walk in the New Forest, and I asked her, "What's the favourite holiday that we've been on?" And she's like, "Oh, I like this one. Oh, no, wait, I like that one. Oh, and this one." And most of them are just here in the UK, you know, as a kid. Their experience is what their experience is.
Yeah.
And but I think it's that. It's she always wants to go back to where we've been, both of them. They all want to go back to where we've been. We go somewhere new. Mm. And, oh, I love it. I want to go back to the Isle of Wight, Daddy. There's a 20-minute ferry ride. Yeah. I love it. Anyway, okay, well, let's do some quick fire questions. Dog or cat?
Cat.
Okay.
Got three.
Have you?
Yes.
Favourite flavour of ice cream?
Vanilla. Boring, perhaps, but traditional.
No, I experienced something. I mentioned it on BMTV a few weeks back. Affogato. It's vanilla ice cream with a shot of espresso on it.
Oh.
It's lovely. I would have thought, I've never liked coffee with cream or anything like that, but just a shot of espresso on plain vanilla ice cream.
That sounds quite nice.
It was stunning. I don't know, something mixed. It didn't taste like espresso. It didn't taste like vanilla ice cream, but the combination was something out of this world.
One.
Yeah. I don't think I came up with this question. If you could be any food, what would you be?
Yeah, that doesn't sound like you.
That's a silly question.
Does dairy milk chocolate count?
Yes, yeah, because I think that's what I would be. 200 gram bar.
Yeah.
I've got issues with those. okay. I've got to ask you, what's your favourite balloon?
Oh, what an impossible question.
It is. That's
what I've got to ask. What an impossible question. Goodness me. I'm invested in some. The curves and the crescents were my concept originally, so I do have a definite attachment to those. But apart from that, orbs. I think they're marvellous.
Yeah.
Absolutely love them.
We're big fans of orbs. And the rose gold orbs.
Oh, that's lovely, isn't
it? It is absolutely.
I remember
beautiful.
Telling you about that when it was Springfest. It's coming.
I know.
And now it's here.
Yeah. But every time, it was like every week after the Spring Fair, everyone was like, "Have you got the rose gold orbs?" No, not yet. We will.
And then well, finally,
it was on the phone to you guys. When are they coming? but they're great.
Yeah, I love orbs.
Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks. Thank you for sharing your insight and wisdom of the industry. Would you come back and show us how to create things maybe in the future?
Yeah, of course I will. I'd love to. Thank you.
Fantastic. No, thanks very much. So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed our very first podcast. What we hope to do with these podcasts is talk to more people that have been in the industry, are in the industry, people that aren't in the industry, but they might be able to offer us some advice on how you can grow your business in the balloon and party trade. Be you a retailer, be you a balloon decorator, be you a party planner. We might be talking about something like marketing, might be talking about something as diverse as honesty in business, and we might be talking about something as simple as, you know, phone systems, who knows. But thank you for listening to this very first podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please rate us. If you didn't, please don't. And look forward to talking to you again in the future.